Welcome to this week's edition of Racing Hotspot. We got some new toys.
It's not new toys, it's Devin forgot what was on his soundboard.
Including a music bed. Alright. Well, probably won't. They'll probably never get used again. But anyways, hey everybody, I'm Devin Poslusty. Standing here with Jordan Jenkins, I almost said like what DBC does, where driver of the number, spotter of the number. Anyways, Devin Poslusty, Jordan Jenkins, welcome to this week's edition of Racing Hotspot. This week, post Circuit of the Americas for NASCAR as well as St. Petersburg for IndyCar. So, yeah, let's get going. First of all, herein we have a short track Saturday segment to talk about. Nope, that wasn't a joke. So,
oh my god,
this is awesome. So here we go, Jordan, take it away. All right, I'm done. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, we are 25 days away from the Thompson Icebreaker weekend, which kicks off, I'd say, the racing season in the Northeast. When I say Northeast, I mean New England. And that is March 29th and March 30th. And I'm only saying this now because it's still, you said it's 25 days away, but the Monaco Modified Tri-Track Series, which is the Saturday headliner for the Icebreaker, announced their first four entries into the race, one being the 2024 Modified Racing Series champion, Matt Swanson. NASCAR Wheel Modified Tour regular Dave Sapienza, Smart Modified Tour runner, but he's from Worcester, Mass., John Michael Chenette, and now part-time in the NASCAR Wheel Modified Tour is Ron Silk, all entered. Woody Pickett also entered, Matt Hirschman, John McKennedy, and Jeffrey Battle, so 8 entries so far, which I think will be an entry list close to 40 modifieds, if I had to guess. It's gonna be, that race is $10,000 to win too, so you know it's gonna be a lot, big money.
Big money.
And Saturday was a good day to drive the 88 car if you drive Virginia Motorsports, because well, we're gonna get to it, but Connor Zilich won the Circuit of the Americas race, but Connor Hall in the Z-Max Cars Tour, in his first race, Virginia Motorsports, drives the 88 late model, also won. So, if you, chances are, if you drive Virginia Motorsports and you drove an 88 car, that you won. So, pretty good Saturday for Virginia Motorsports. They got 2 wins.
Yeah, not bad at all. Yeah, it's. I was gonna bring up Zilich and say how it's funny how, with, how racing goes in the sense of you're on the highest of highs on Saturday and then you run into a teammate on Sunday. One could say that's, you know. All right, I'm sorry, I'm done with that. But point is like, it's just, it's interesting how in the racing world you go from, like I said, the highest of highs to you wrecked. Maybe not necessarily hitting a teammate, but you wrecked on Sunday, and it's like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And someone from the Northeast, the Smart Modified Tour, also started Saturday as well. And Blake Barney, who's from New Jersey, actually ran an MRS race last year, won the Smart Modified Tour. So congrats to him.
There you go.
Even though he's not a New England guy, he's still considered Northeast.
Yeah.
New Jersey is just outside of New England, but that's pretty
just
cool.
Just outside. But yeah, no, I mean still Northeast.
And John Michael Chenette, who I mentioned, is running the tri-track race at Thompson, both of them. It finished top 10 in the Smart Modified Tour, which is a good story because they're a relatively small team, so it's good to see them run top 10.
Yeah.
That series also has Ryan Newman run full-time, so. You know, they have some star power there.
A little bit. A little bit. No, Newman's a good driver, good person to have in your series because he's a good driver, but all around a really good person, at least from what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, star power as well as positive power behind it.
Mm-hmm. And I think I mentioned this, like, the first episode of this year, but a Short Track Saturday will be longer than what it was last year, just on the sole fact that I'll be traveling way more than I did last year. I have eight. I have. I'm working 82 race days at 14 different racetracks this year.
Wow.
And I'll just quickly go through those tracks. It'll be New Hampshire Motor Speedway, Oxford Plains Speedway, Star Speedway, Monadnock Speedway, Thunder Road, White Mountain Motorsports Park, Riverside Speedway, the New Hampshire Motor Speedway Dirt Track, Waterford Speedbowl, Thompson Speedway, Stafford Speedway, Seekonk Speedway, Lee USA Speedway, and Claremont Motorsports Park.
What are you doing for the dirt track again?
I will be covering the Sprint Cars in New England race.
Right.
On the Friday Night Dirt Duels.
Are you, like, what are you doing? Like, social media stuff?
Yes.
Nice. Cool. Did the series upgrade your sleeping arrangements, or are you still going to be staying in the tent?
No, I still can.
Sorry.
Yeah, probably.
Jordan, a couple years ago, started staying with us on our campsite, and because we don't really have room in our camper, he's had a tent, and it's gone through a couple variations throughout the years. Went from little itty-bitty kid tent
which was Devin's fault.
That we didn't realize was a kid tent,
that
to
was Devin's fault.
A more adult tent, which, by the way, I know this is completely off topic, but it's still under my backseat in
my
truck.
Yeah, I know.
It's been a long time.
It's been almost June.
Almost a year.
It's okay.
Anyways. So,
can you believe there's already going to be year number four of that?
Of what?
This is going to be the fourth year that I camp at with you guys.
Only four?
Yeah, I know, right?
Jeez, it feels like longer.
I know. It should, because obviously you have such a great time, so with me, it's great.
That's really what it is.
Well, one thing I've come to find...
Promise I'll use the sound effects only for us, not any talk about like racing and stuff.
One thing I've come to realize too is apparently I'll be following Ryan Preece around a lot around New England, because he announced that he'll be running. I don't know if he's running yet, but he's going to be at Thompson on Wednesday, May 14th for the Tri-Track Series race. Because I haven't mentioned this, but he's also now becoming a car owner. He's running a modified team that's going to be in the Tri-Track Series. His driver's going to be Luke Baldwin.
Nice.
So I don't know if he's going to be there just to support Luke or if he's going to be running himself as well. I mean, obviously, Priest hasn't modified himself, but the only thing is Baldwin's running the 40, which I believe is Priest's modified, so I think he'd probably just be there as an owner. But it was also announced that he'll be at Stafford on Wednesday, July 16th, which I'll also happen to be covering that modified race that day, too, which is another Tri-Track Series race. So I'm like, I'm going to be following Ryan Preece around a lot.
Hey, you know.
So if Ryan Preece is out of track, just assume I'm probably going to be there.
Oh, my goodness. No, I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, he's very active in the racing world up here in the Northeast when he's not on the NASCAR circuit. And I mean, funny enough, not to get on to this topic, but by NASCAR shortening the race weekends, it really put the drivers back either at home or on short tracks.
Yeah.
Which, as much as people might not like the fact that the race weekends are shorter, it is helping the the touring series by being able to be like, Ryan Preece will be here on Wednesday. Like, if there was a full weekend, wherever that weekend for the Cup Series is, I think I want to say it's around Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if he had sponsorship obligations on Wednesday night in Atlanta, if let's say he couldn't run that race.
Right.
So,
like Kyle Busch and Daniel Hemric were at Oxford last year on 4th of July week, I guess, for the Celebration of America 300. Mm-hmm. So that was like middle of the week in Maine, and I don't even remember where NASCAR was that 4th of July weekend last year
was Chicago.
So that, yeah, Chicago. Okay, so Chicago street race, and Hemric and Busch on a Wednesday were in Maine running.
Yep.
But, yeah, the Monaco Tri-Track Series, I'll be at 6 of their races this year, and they have a very star-studded field, really, all year. They have Patrick Emmerling, who's going to be running either full-time or part-time with them. I don't remember. Ron Silk, Matt Swanson, I mean, Matt Hirschman, John McKennedy, Luke Baldwin. I mean, just the talent. You look at they have probably... They averaged like 32 cars last year, and it was like, oh, you know every single one of these names.
Right.
So, yeah, it'll be short track Saturday this year is going to be a lot of fun when I do the segments, because I'll be doing a lot more. 82 race days is a lot, though, so.
You're going to have to get your own podcast.
I have.
Oh, awkward.
I have
Sound guy in the back doesn't agree.
I have one week. I have 1 week. Devin's having too much fun with that.
I am. Woo! Live studio audience.
I have 1 week where on Wednesday I'm at Stafford, Thursday I'm at Thunder Road, Friday and Saturday I'm at Star, and then Sunday I'm in Oxford. So.
Wow. And then Monday, he doesn't leave his bed.
Monday, I'll be here.
Oh, that's right. We have a podcast. Oh, that's right. We're recording a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. Whoops. Anyways. Monday, he'll be recovering. No, I mean, it's going to be cool. And I mean, and I'm hoping I'll be able to join you. I know we talked about, like, the Oxford 250 weekend, like, camping. And
Thompson Icebreaker.
Thompson Ice. Well, no, no. Stafford.
Like, we can't do Stafford.
Why not?
Because, unfortunately, Spring Scissor Weekend, that Saturday, Star Speedway's opener. So I'll just be at the...
You can't. So you
I mean,
can't.
I'll be at the Spring Scissor Sunday anyway, but...
No, I got you, though. Okay.
Unless I just... After the Star Show, I run up... I go to Stafford, which isn't too far. It's like a two-hour drive.
The camper's there.
It's 2 hours anyway, so it's not like it's 4 hours. It's... 2 hours, but it really feels like an hour. It doesn't feel long
at
all.
It's not bad at all.
But
no, I mean, point is I'm hoping to join you a little bit more. I know in the video production world, it's pretty, racing's pretty sensitive when it comes to, like, who films what. So I'll probably just be more fan.
Yeah.
I know people.
Which doesn't hurt. How often can you do anything as a fan nowadays?
That's very true. That's true. That media badge is basically tattooed on my arm at this point. But no, I mean, it's, yeah, that'll be cool. It'll be fun. It'll be good racing season for you. I'm excited for you.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited too. I do have a chance. I don't know if I'm going to do this. I don't even know if I've told you I may have, but I do have a chance to shadow an IndyCar broadcast, the IndyCar radio.
I'm going to say you told me that.
For.
That was a chance, but.
For the Indianapolis 500.
Huh.
The only thing is I have a. Tri-Track Series race that same day at Thunder Road. So it's more like...
Well, shucks.
So it's not. It's more like a make money or spend money.
True.
But at the same time, shadowing a broadcast for the Indy 500.
That might be cool.
Yeah. I don't know.
That might be one of those like once-in-a-lifetime things. I don't really know.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, that's whatever happens, happens. It's going to be pretty cool. All right. So... anything else on Short Track Saturday?
No.
Okay. So let's move on to IndyCar because they opened their season up this weekend down in St. Petersburg. And the race itself was pretty IndyCar style in the sense of, well, after they all wrecked in turn one, the race kind of settled in. Alex Palou with the win, Scott Dixon second, Joseph Newgarden third. But no, I mean, overall, I mean, you had the opening lap accident, which is one of those deals that I feel like you look at how IndyCar races, like, more times than not, let me back up. Opening lap of the first race of the season, you have chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in one place or another. But it's just kind of like everybody settling in, everybody getting used to their cars, everyone, you know, that like getting reacclimated. But additionally, it's open wheel racing. Right. You know, if you look at your opponent's wheel the wrong way, you're in the wall, you know, and obviously that's an exaggeration. My point is like, unlike the stock cars or NASCAR, if you touch, there's a chance there's a wreck, you know, the cars aren't as fragile as like Formula One, but
they are.
They're
you feel like you tap a wall and there goes your car.
Exactly. So,
but that's also because they're open wheel anyway. So,
right.
Really, it doesn't take much for the tire rod to go or a tire anyway.
Right. Exactly. So, point being is the race itself was pretty standard. It was a good race.
I thought it was gonna be chaotic. Like you said, lap one and. Two cars are already out of the race. I'm like, oh, it's going to be chaotic.
Well, and I think that with, like, any series that, unless it's, like, a non-points-paying event like a Bowman Gray or an all-star race for NASCAR, you're looking at that and you're thinking to yourself, okay, like, the driver's wrecked in turn one. Now you're going to head on to the restart and everyone's going to be on eggshells.
Right.
you know, because of the fact that, like, there's points to give. You know, Will Power, I don't know what the standings look like, obviously only after one race. Will Power is 26th in the standings. You know, he shouldn't be 26th after race one. You know, so, and he's second to last.
Right.
Nolan Siegel is the other one. But, you know, so point being is like, I feel like after that first lap accident, everyone was like, okay, we have 90 something laps to get through. Let's settle in.
Yeah, it did feel weird though, not hearing Lee Diffie for IndyCar, obviously because now they're on Fox, but it just felt weird. It's like Will, to get used to.
Will did a great job.
He did.
You know, and so did Hinch and Townsend Bell. That whole press box or that whole announcing group meshed, which is awesome.
I also like the IndyCar ticker for Fox better than they do for the NASCAR one.
So that's something I was going to bring up. The NASCAR, the Fox coverage was, in my opinion, outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a NASCAR fan through and through, and I was jealous of what IndyCar's coverage looked like because, as a producer, I like little details amazed me.
Right.
And what I mean by that, and let me say this real quick. Infield care center coverage, right? Standard. You have an accident, driver goes to the infield care center, you have Jamie Little or somebody, interview them, and there you go.
That's the thing you got used to. I was like, Jamie Little's in Jamie Little IndyCar, what? Because I'm just so used to her being on the pit road for like a cup race, and it's right. Just like, oh, there she is.
But my point being is that they interviewed them,
mm-hmm.
and instead of a side-by-side like NASCAR and Fox would do, it was just a little itty-bitty pop-out window up near the scoreboard ticker, picture-in-picture.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't take up the whole screen, didn't reduce how much of the racing on-track action mm-hmm. you could see. It was just enough to see the driver's face,
right,
and boom.
The NASCAR on CW does the same thing. It's like a bottom right corner.
Yeah,
where they have
it's
like
just like a little, whoop, little window and goes away. That said, there were still some things that the production crew made mistakes on.
Cartoon characters.
Well, no, not one lap, but also.
That's not even just, that's just a whole Fox thing. Even in the NFL, I don't like it.
But I'm just saying, like, they were, the lap one accident, they interviewed, I want to say it was Siegel.
I think it was
Nolan
Siegel.
Or Foster, one of those two.
Yeah, I think it was Foster, because I think Siegel was when it was back to green.
Mm. Well, no, so it was during the green. They showed a replay, and they showed the replay from, like, a long shot. And whoever it was just like, I haven't seen a replay yet. So then the graphic change, like the screen changes, and he's like, oh, here we go. And the replay, it's like looking at the long end of the straightaway, at the top of the straightaway, and he just goes, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I'm going, oh, you missed that one, Fox. You missed that one.
Because like, they showed a replay of like pretty much a car. They were like a camera like right there, too. Like it was mm-hmm. just like, oh. They just didn't want to show that one, I guess.
Right, like I was like, nope, that's not a good, nope, no, that's not what we were looking for. But you know what? It was their first broadcast, and I assume a new producer for the IndyCar side. So little mistakes are going to happen, but like the graphics package was sleek. It was modern. It was very, I don't want to say basic, but basic is good.
Yeah,
in the sport
you don't want
of,
a complex thing.
Like, yeah, like in the sport of racing that's so fast, when like they had like a pop-up, a lower third pop-up, and it was saying like, you know, the last seven IndyCar races here had the last call, like a Larry McGrenell type deal.
Mm-hmm.
It was just literally squared off and two different color tones and the text.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's what you need to do. I love what Fox does for NASCAR with the moving graphics and the paints and everything. And it looks nice, but it's like when you already have cars going 200 miles an hour, it's like, whoa. And now we have this graphic that's also moving.
Mm-hmm.
It could be like, what am I looking at? So I like the fact that the top five were blown up with the driver's faces, cartoons or not. I mean, I personally don't have a stance on it. I know people do, but I don't personally care either way if it's a cartoon or not.
It's just weird when you have all the NASCAR media shots and they're just not used because it's like, no, cartoon.
Well, it's the funny part is like when you have like a Kyle Busch and it's his headshot and he's got a six pack.
Yeah.
It's like, Maybe he does, but that doesn't
like
show.
Like Denny Hamlin
the fire
has a six pack too, and Denny Hamlin's pretty fit, but I don't think he has a six pack.
But like, but the thing is, it doesn't show through like the driver's suit.
No,
like, it's like, huh, okay, but
it's like, wow, these drivers are ripped.
Whether or not they do or they don't, wow. It's like this isn't real. But my point is like I liked the fact that you know you had the graphics. I saw something online that said that. IMS Productions was still the one running the cameras and everything, similar to what they did with IndyCar or NBC. But, like, Fox brought different things, like the drone, which was pretty cool to see the drone flying around St. Petersburg. Because I think that really puts it in perspective. Like, you can have a helicopter shot of showing the runway and all, and it's like, oh, that's cool. But as soon as you have a shot that is 300 feet or even lower, maybe more like 200, maybe 150, it, like, kind of puts it in perspective of how, like, whoa.
Right.
Like, this is, wow, okay. So, like, I think Fox knocked it out of the park.
I thought it was cool, too, because, like, obviously in the cup race at COTA was on the regular Fox, too. So, like, after IndyCar coverage ended, they went right to the it was literally, like, boom, commercial pre-race of the COTA.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I think if Fox is looking –
which ain't going to happen all the time because obviously sometimes it's good they're going to overlap, but that was just a case where the cup race was 3.5 hours after IndyCar. So, but it's still – I think I saw either Facebook or on X how many IndyCar races you'd be able to watch in full without – before the cup race goes green, and it's 7 of them.
I mean, so Fox, Big Fox – has all the IndyCar races.
Yes.
There's no NBC, NBCSN, or anything like that. It's all
Fox.
Like, and I mean, like, no Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports 2. Obviously, the Cup Series not as fortunate.
I think IndyCar practice like, will be on FS2, but...
Something like that. But it just... It's... I hope that Fox does not drop the ball on that because at the end of the day... Your IndyCar and your NASCAR, although separate entities and separate companies and separate series, they are both going to benefit from Fox IndyCar saying, okay, have a great day, everybody. Commercial NASCAR at COTA. Like, you're going to have bleed over. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have... The race fan that steps away to go make popcorn or whatever and come back and it's NASCAR and it's like, whoa, this was good racing. Whoa, okay, I want to keep it on. You know, and the same thing with NHRA. You know, I think that if you have it so that you have the ability to have it where it's back-to-back, then do it. Because I think Fox, in this case, has the ability to help multiple partners. And I think that Fox, I would like to believe that Fox went to NASCAR, went to IndyCar and said, hey, on March 2nd, why don't we take the COTA race and go here with it? Why don't we take the St. Petersburg race and go here with it? This way, you had that back-to-back culture of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I hope Fox did that. I hope Fox went to both of their partners and said, here's what we're thinking. What do you think? And because at the end of the day, IndyCar cares about race fans.
Right.
But if they have to race at 3 and NASCAR's racing at 3,
I think, based on my knowledge, you may know better than me because I've never been to an IndyCar race, but I've been wanting to. It just does not. IndyCar doesn't really. I think the closest IndyCar race is Nashville. If I'm trying to. Nashville Super Speedway.
Oh, I have the schedule here. Hold on, keep talking.
I think, but so, I feel like, it feels like IndyCar is more of a spectacle on race. NASCAR is a spectacle on race days too. It just feels like I feel like IndyCar has like a special factor to it.
Detroit. And Indiana are your two closest tracks to us.
Indiana.
Nope, Mid-Ohio.
Oh.
I mean, it's a short 12-hour drive, but
yeah, it's still
there.
You can do that in one day, technically.
We did.
I mean, how far was Daytona Beach to Charlotte?
We drove. That was that was fine, but it was the
How many hours was that though?
That was 6 hours, 8 hours.
Oh, that was it.
Okay. It was six hours without the trailer, 8 hours with the trailer. But then the next day we did 13 hours with the trailer.
Yeah.
That was from Charlotte.
Because we were both like, I just want to get home.
Charlotte to New Hampshire.
That's because we were destined, because we were like, we just want to get home.
Towing a camper. Jeez Louise. But,
that was fun.
But anyways, Mid-Ohio is the closest race to us. But I know what you're saying.
It feels like IndyCar, it's going to, motorsports, like any IMSA race is like that. NASCAR is like that. But it feels like something with Formula One is obviously like that too. Especially the Las Vegas Grand Prix, which I would love to go to someday.
So,
but it feels like Formula One, IndyCar, like the biggest spectacles when it comes to that, just because it's like, I don't know if it's because they're all pretty much road courses, pretty much, or street courses, but or what. But
well, that's okay. So the two IndyCar races I've been to was the one here in Loudoun, New Hampshire, in 2011. I was 11. I don't really, like, I didn't have anything to gauge off.
I thought you've been to the Indy 500.
Oh, hold on.
Okay.
And I went to the Indy 500
oh, okay.
in 2016. So I don't feel like you can judge a series off of its biggest day.
Right, because that's going
to
be...
Like, go to the Daytona 500.
Right.
Whoa. Go to the August race.
Well...
You know what I mean? Like there's still...
I think it,
we went to the August race last year. There's still a lot of hype.
Yeah.
But it's not... Daytona 500.
Right. And obviously, the Indianapolis 500 is considered the greatest spectacle in motorsports, which mm-hmm. I would agree. I would say it's probably bigger than the Daytona 500.
Greatest spectacle in racing.
Yeah.
Get it right.
Whatever.
Jeez Louise.
I feel like, I would agree with, Indy 500 is bigger than the Daytona 500. I mean, they're both good, big, but it's just... My dad said this. It's weird that the NASCAR's biggest race of the year is their opener, which is like, it's true because like it's considered the Super Bowl in NASCAR, but it's the opener.
It's the way they do it, and I don't know why, but it's just, well, I mean, I do know why, because back in the 50s, the Florida weather was the most predictable, and to a degree, it still kind of is.
Yeah.
So like, it's easier for NASCAR to say, we're going to start in Daytona.
Right.
You know, we know that we can race here. You know, we're not going to get snow, although Florida got snow this year. But, like, we know we're not going to get snow. It's not hurricane season. You know, like, there's so many.
It's still rain, though.
Potential rain, but I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of factors in their control. It's like if you go to L.A. and race a race out there.
Like, I'm pretty sure.
Except for the couple times
I'm pretty sure
it rained.
When we were there in August, there was, like, a 90% chance of rain, like, every day. And it rained, like, the first day we were there, mm-hmm. like, when it was nothing. Like, there was, like, just.
Yeah, that was fun.
Bearings Day, I guess you can call it. And that it didn't even pour. I guess it rained consistently enough where we were just like, okay, this is annoying. But I think it was Cup Race Day where we were under severe weather alert for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we got the notification saying, severe weather. And then, it was like 2 o'clock.
I was going to say, but even then it was 2 o'clock. The race started at 7.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
It was like severe weather alert. Okay, 5 minutes later. Okay, lifted. Okay.
So to go back to what you said, I think, so hear me out here. I think that both races, Indy 500 and Daytona 500, are important and big enough in their own regard.
Right.
But I think, first of all, the Indy 500 has been around
way longer.
Almost 40, if not 50, no, 40. 40 years longer.
Yeah, so it's more historic.
50 years, actually, because the first Indy 500 was 1909, I think it was. Or maybe it was 1911. But either way, it was a while.
Right.
So you have that. But
it's
also
more historic.
But
that
also,
way.
The other half of this that I think that, you know, IndyCar fans, if they were sitting right here, they would be like, yes, is the fact that NASCAR, we were so excited when Castro Neves came to race.
Yep.
You know, we have Australian, we have Castro Neves, we have SVG, we have Castro Neves, we have Suarez. You know, four cars on one team, four countries. Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
The Americans are outnumbered in the IndyCar series.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that my point in saying that is that on a bigger scale, the Indy 500 is a worldwide event.
Right.
You know, the 500, Daytona 500 is as well.
But that's more more a worldwide event on the fan perspective because you have fans from different countries coming. Where and really the Daytona 500 had what you said four different countries there because New Zealand. No, where's the SVG from? New Zealand?
Australia, I thought. Hold on.
And then Suarez is from Mexico. Castroneves is from Brazil. So that's three different countries. Obviously, the U.S., four. So, yeah.
I just Googled SVG, and it came up with how to convert a file from SVG to PNG. Hold on.
But
that's not right.
So, the Daytona 500 had...
He's from New Zealand.
So, the Daytona 500 had New Zealand represented, Brazil, Mexico, and the U.S. That's four. Yeah, that's four countries for the 500, where IndyCar...
Potentially five. I don't know if we had any Canadian drivers this year. But anyways, go on.
But so, four, maybe five countries...
Where
in, like you said, IndyCar, Indy 500, I mean, Joseph Newgarden is American, but...
So here you go. IndyCar, IndyCar.com.
Yeah.
Spain, New Zealand, United States, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, Mexico, and Denmark, I already said, Cayman Islands,
yeah,
United Kingdom,
yeah,
Israel, Canada, Australia... Trying to remember what I already said. Brazil. I already said United Kingdom.
I'm at 13 if you didn't repeat any.
No, I would say 12 or 13. Yeah, repeated one.
But either way, I mean,
One, two. So hold on. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So 15 United States drivers to the 12 to 13 other countries.
So it's almost even in that aspect.
Yeah. So, I mean, now granted, most of the, from what I've seen, most drivers are from, like, you have a lot of
New Zealanders?
Yep. you know, but so really the United States does outweigh everybody because, like, you have like a couple United Kingdom, you have one Brazil, you know, a couple Australia, you know, so like you one Canadian, one Israeli. So the United States does outweigh everybody else, but like you're going to have people from Australia tune in to watch the Indy 500 at whatever time it is their time to watch Will Power.
Yep.
You know, and it's not just like his family. He's representing a country.
Right.
You know, so like same like so yes, you know, the Indy 500 is the greatest spectacle in racing, mainly because like I think in my opinion, the other half of this is the fact that the Indy 500, they're doing 220 plus miles an hour and the track doesn't look anything crazy. Meaning, like, you go to Daytona and you have the banking of 33 degrees. It's like, whoa. Meanwhile, you go to IndyCar, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and it's like, that's only 8 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
New Hampshire's got the same amount of
banking.
Like, it's like, huh? But if obviously the cars are trimmed off to basically just glue themselves to the racetrack and be slot cars. Right. So, like, it makes sense.
I'm pretty sure IndyCar's biggest banking track they go to is probably Nashville.
Probably. But I'm just saying, like, that's a spectacle in itself.
Right.
Is the fact that you tune in to Fox this year, and it's like, you go to the Daytona 500, it's like, whoa, look at those bankings. Then you go to the Indy 500, it's like,
where's the banking?
That track is flat. But then they do 240 miles an hour, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
So, like,
and I think with the Indy 500, too, is they do, like, a whole week of practice and qualifying before it, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's that, and the fact that Indy now does the road course the week before, that's huge as well because it, like, it just builds hype.
Yeah.
It's what NASCAR used to do with the 500.
Yeah, it looks like I'll camp at Indy for 2 weeks in that case. Well,
but that's what I'm saying.
Technically, like, a week, but.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's what NASCAR used to do with the 500. Yeah. You know, hey, we're going to have the clash. The next day, we're going to qualify. Monday, Tuesday, we have off. Wednesday, we have practice. Thursday, we have the duels. Friday, we have the truck race. Saturday, Xfinity. Cup race on Sunday.
Yep.
By then, you all want to leave because you're all raced out.
Yep.
So IndyCar does the same thing. And you're right. They that's the other half of this, is the fact that IndyCar for – so the Daytona 500, everyone shows up on Tuesday. They leave on Monday. IndyCar, everyone shows up in April and leaves on in June. Like, there's a reason why they say it's the month of May and then, at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Like, it's truly a month worth of practice and testing and qualifying.
And then they have June off, and then July, here comes the Brickyard 400 now.
For the Cup Series. But it's talking about Indianapolis Motor Speedway as in general. But no, I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
And that's
the spectacle in itself.
And that just goes to show you how, like, how big Indianapolis Motor Speedway is. Like, it's probably bigger than Daytona in terms of the hype around it, I guess. Like, Daytona has a lot about it, but there's just Indy 500, Brickyard 400. I mean, Indianapolis just has behind it.
But hold on. If we're doing that, then we need to include the Rolex at Daytona.
Oh, true.
You know,
yeah,
so
I forgot about the Rolex.
So it's kind of like, I don't even know how we got on this topic, but like,
I don't know either.
It's like a trade off.
Yeah.
You know, like, yes, Indianapolis, it's the Brickyard. That's the other thing.
Like the Rolex 24, the history. I guess. The Rolex 24, you can say, starts the racing in North America, I guess.
Yes, they do. Well, besides or in Supercross.
I should say America.
Four wheel.
Yeah.
Four wheel sports. Yeah. Because Supercross starts the weekend after New Year's, but that's.
Right. Deal.
But point is like, Indy has so much history as well. And I think the other half of this is that Indianapolis is almost like a prime example of the American dream. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, like, they wanted to build a racetrack. So they didn't have paving equipment. So they laid frickin' bricks down. I don't know why I said the frickin' word. But anyways, point is it's like, whoa. You know, they put 2.5 mile oval that's 40 to 50 feet wide, and you're laying bricks that are 2 inches, 3 inches by six. Whoa. Like, it's almost like they had a dream. They built it. They raced it. Obviously, technology involved. They said, okay, evolved. So they added the asphalt. They left the strip of bricks for the start-finish line. But then Indianapolis was part of the reason why we now have the safer barrier. Like, I think it's... The Indy 500 is, like, it stands for so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yes, it's a 500-mile race with 33 of the best drivers in the world going 200-plus miles an hour, and it's amazing. And you have, like, when I went to the 500 in 2016, now granted it was the 100th running of the Indy 500, we had 400,000 people with us. And that was just my friend group. No, I'm just kidding. But like, here we go. No, but like, the whole place was packed. You know, like, all the mounds in the corner, like the infield viewing.
You're like
mounds
elbow to elbow wherever,
like,
you go.
Exactly. Like, and it was just like, it's huge. And if you get the chance to go this year or whenever you go, just take in the surrounding area. Because if anybody out there has been to Indianapolis, you know that you get off the highway, you're driving down what could be like the equivalent of like Concord, New Hampshire, and all of a sudden it's a freaking racetrack. Like, you know, you get Daytona, you get off of I-4, and it's like, boom, centerpiece.
Right.
Daytona. Here, it's like city street, quiet neighborhood, racetrack. It's like, what? What? Where did that come from? Like, there are no major parking lots for the Indy 500. You park on people's grass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people utilize it to make some money.
Yeah, 100%.
Know? Hey, $20, park right here, track's right there. Woo! You know, like, it's just, point is like, I think that to a degree it also, it like embodies that idea of like grassroots. You know, this is your racetrack. We don't take up 7 acres or 70 acres for parking and camping.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, we have a racetrack. Racetrack has what it needs. We have a golf course as well, because golf courses are needed with racetracks. And like I think that's the thing. Like, I think it's just Indianapolis has so much
about it. Yeah.
You know, and the fact that it's also Memorial Day. It's been Memorial Day for decades. Like, my friend Matt and I went camping last year. He's a race fan, kind of. He's a casual fan. we went camping Memorial Day weekend, and he came over to my campsite. He's like, when's the Indy 500 on? It's like, I'm sorry, what'd you just say?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you just know, everyone know, even if you're not, like, a casual race fan, or maybe not even a race fan, you're just like, you just know Indy 500,
it's Sunday, Indy Memorial Day weekend. Yeah,
Indy 500.
Yep. And, I mean, and that's the other thing. Indy, just like Daytona, Indy embraces that. You know, like, the tradition of singing Back Home Again in Indiana. You know, the tradition of the national anthem and the flyover and the releasing of the balloons and, like, all these things that have been in place for this event for decades. You know, like, I don't know. I'm just getting goosebumps thinking about it. Like, it's just, it is the greatest spectacle in racing. And again, that's before 33 cars go into turn one doing 240 miles an hour. So I think that, you know, IndyCar definitely takes the win there. Daytona is just as big as well, but I think Daytona's win a big, I think Daytona's prestige is more stock car based because of its history. You know, and I think that's the same thing with, you know, Formula One in Monaco. You know, you look at the Monaco Grand Prix, and it's like, you're watching it on TV, and unfortunately, the newer generations are watching this going, this race is boring. There's no passing. There's, you know.
Max Verstappen wins by 50 miles.
But I guess what I'm saying is, like, you look at the Monaco Grand Prix, and it's like, if you don't know, you're just like, these guys, are they, driving through New York City? Like,
yeah.
It looks like that. But then you learn more about it, and it's like, oh, there's a lot of prestige to that. And, like, for us, we get the opportunity to watch Monaco at 9 a.m., Indy 500 at noon, Coca-Cola 600 at 6.
We almost said midnight.
Like, I almost said midnight, yeah. Well, last year when it rained. But anyways.
Yeah.
But my point is it's like, it is a tradition. So, yeah, I'd love to go back to the Indy 500. I dropped the ball on that. We went and we flew in the day before, and my dad and I walked in. We didn't know, so we went right to our seats and sat there.
Oh.
We didn't go to the museum. We didn't check out any of the displays. Look, him and I, we just didn't know.
Right.
And we leave the racetrack. We go back to the hotel. And I'm like, that was fun. Dad's like, me too. And then, like, I had fun too. And then, like, the next day I see all these things that happen, and I'm like, oh, dang it. But, I mean, I was also, you know, younger, and I was tired, and I was just like, I'm good.
Yeah, that was me at
– Race starts in 2 hours? Cool.
That was me at Daytona. That was – August was the first time I've ever been to Daytona, and when I went in, like, you know, like, in, I wanted to do the infield fan zone, which we did. Mm-hmm. The Motorsports Hall of Fame of America was really cool. Definitely don't regret, like, paying $6, $8, whatever it was to go in there, because you buy a ticket once and it's good for the whole year. So I went in there 2 days because I was just like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. It's a pretty.
It was like if I didn't do that, I would have been like, oh,
yeah,
man.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I think that for me at the time, you know, I wasn't. My dad is a casual race fan, so he was like, yeah, let's go to the Indy 500. I'm like, great, we're going. And, like, I didn't do my research. I didn't look into, you know, all the ins and outs of the place. Mm-hmm. Like, I was, like, focused. Okay, we're going to our seats. Okay, to our seats. Okay, great. Woo. All right.
Woo.
It's 10 o'clock. The race starts at noon. You know, we got some pre-race entertainment. Like, this is cool. And then race happened, and that was the year that Alexander Rossi won when he ran out of gas coming off of turn four and went across the line doing 45 miles an hour. The race pace was 200. That was the average speed. And he finished the race doing 45. He was like, whoa. Whoa. But anyways, it's great. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah. So Circuit of the Americas.
All right, folks. That's all we have. Have a good night. We're at 45 minutes, so here we go.
Circuit of the Americas.
All right, so I caught the highlights of the Xfinity race. From what I saw, it was pretty business as usual. Nothing too crazy happened.
Well, they were racing it like a freaking short, like it was a short track. I know it's shorter. It was a shorter track overall for Coda. It was because that was the shorter course. But they were racing it like it was like Martinsville. Like Christian Eckes had his pretty much his door off. It was a big open gauge or whatever, right on Christian Eckes' door on lap like two. Huh. It was just like, and I think the CW was just like, wow. You would think this is lap the final lap. No, this is lap two.
Jeez.
Like even, I think it was, maybe it was yesterday in the cup race. I don't even remember what car it was. There was a car that was all like taped up. Like they just raced Talladega or Daytona. And it was like all taped up and they finished in the top 10. It was just like, wow, it doesn't feel like a road course when you see all a bunch of cars with damage on them.
This is not a road course.
But I thought, I honestly thought Quapel and Zilich were going to wreck each other. Because they kind of banged doors a couple times, and it's like, uh-oh, they're going to take each other out, and Austin Hill's going to win. But, no, I said last week that Zilich was the driver to watch, which was pretty, you know, easy, pretty simple, obviously. But he's batting 1,000 when he starts on the pole in road course. He won at Watkins Glen last year, and now Circuit of the Americas. But I definitely think Circuit of the Americas might be one of the better road courses on the schedule. And I'm not counting, like, the Roval in that because Roval is kind of different because it's...
It's
but, like, Watkins Glen, Sonoma, Chicago Street Race.
I think every...
And Coda. I just think... There's just something about Coda that's just, like, this is amazing.
I think every racetrack has its lore.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, we go back to talking about, like... Or we just mentioned how racing on the big stage, right? NASCAR goes to Indianapolis, it's like, whoa, this is the Brickyard 400. Same deal. You're running now on the same course, kind of, that Formula One runs on.
Right.
And you're running on a Formula One racetrack, which I think is what really makes the excitement there, because you have these room for forgiveness. Like, it is a thought-out race course, modern thought-out race course. You know, whereas you go to Watkins Glen, same deal. It's a great racetrack, but it's a 1970s racetrack.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with Sonoma. You know, the Roval is basically a street course.
Right.
The Chicago street course, well, it is. So I think that, you know, I like Coda. I think it's a really cool track. I like the shorter course.
Yeah, I do too.
I you know, don't get me wrong. I know there are people out there who are like, no, we need to be on the long course because that's the course that Formula One runs. I get where you're coming from, but I think for these stock cars,
it's better.
This works.
I think so too.
And I will say, Turn 6A. That course is. I know last week I mentioned how I've raced this course on Formula One on the Xbox. It's a different course, so there are basically two cut acrosses in the middle. One of them they used, which was just a straight run, and the other one is before that, where it kind of goes, it cuts to the left, and then there's like a little chicane, quick left right, and then back to that straightaway. And they didn't use that one, and I don't know if maybe it was just too narrow or NASCAR deemed that just have a straight cut across. But I like the fact that they kind of reworked it so that you had turn 6A was more of a break. Like, you could outbreak the guy
right. And
go.
And so turn one, as it always is just pure chaos, especially, like, on the restarts.
Right.
It's just like, whoa.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't understand why they went five wide on lap one to turn one. And I'm not just saying that as a Chase Elliott fan who saw Chase Elliott get taken out in turn one, lap one.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of like, why are we going five wide to turn one? Like, got 90 laps, guys. Why are we doing this? Like, everyone needs to be calm. Everyone needs to be cool. Everyone needs to, like, play smart.
Usually, but, I mean, I'm trying to think of the last time road course had Twitter beef at the end. Shout out Josh Bulicki and Chris Wright. They were pure entertainment all of yesterday. They went on for a while too. It wasn't just like an hour. It was like you thought it was done, and then Chris Wright posted, "Hey, this is what happened in Atlanta, so.
Yeah.
But Josh Blicky, not Josh Blicky, Chris Wright kind of told on himself. So Chris Wright tweeted, like, three screenshots from Atlanta last week, thinking Blicky came down on him. They're three wide. I'm showing Devin the pictures. Blicky is the three wide in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks Blicky came in on him.
Huh.
But the thing is, you can see the white line. You can see Balicki's car is on the white line in each of the three pictures.
I'll say that.
So everyone's kind of like, you just told on yourself. But Josh Balicki kind of came out with a big comment. I'm not going to say exactly what he said because it's paragraphs long.
Oh, I thought we were going to pull out the button, but go on.
No, because it didn't have a – I guess it kind of does.
Hold on. There we go. Go ahead. No, just kidding.
But he pretty much said that Chris Wright should just go back to driving LMP3 in IMSA with doctors and dentists because he's just an embarrassment to the sport. And just like, oh. It was like, wow. Oh, okay.
All right.
Like, and Chris Wright is the, like, I want to feel bad for him. But it's been 3 weeks into the season. And unfortunately, Coda, like, there's no video evidence from what happened between the two. Someone just, Blicky says Chris Wright took him out. Chris Wright said he got loose and Blicky cleaned him out. But there's no video. Like, Fox didn't show this or anything. There's no video whatsoever. So on the Chris Wright's side, he's kind of Carson Hosfar from Atlanta. So when he drives aggressively after he did it at Daytona in Atlanta, he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. So it's kind of like, oh. Like, Chris Wright was the same guy that went 180 miles per hour into the pits at Daytona and drove through the back of Josh Blicky and blamed the spotter for not pressing the brake pedal. So, it's kind of like, you know, I guess that's why NASCAR Twitter is, like, undefeated to me. You know, you always get beef. Like, I think it was last year where it was Marcus Smith and Denny Hamlin.
Yeah, that was...
And I was just like, woo! Get the popcorn ready.
That was fun.
So, yesterday was Josh Blicky and Chris Wright. It was just like, this is great. NASCAR beef on Twitter is just something else. It's great. You got to go through all the... I read every single one, too. It's great. But I thought... But, yeah, it was great.
Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to find an email that I was going to bring up, but can't find it.
The Chevys have won the first three races for the Xfinity Series. RCR the first two with Jesse Love and Austin Hill, and now Connor Zillers with Junior Motorsports.
Huh.
And like I said, it was a good day to drive an 88 car for Junior Motorsports because they got two wins.
That's true.
Z-Max Cars Tour in the 88 and Connor Zillers in the 88, so shout out Junior Motorsports for that.
Yeah. I lost my email. Oh, well. I don't know. With the whole Chris Wright situation, like, it's kind of like your actions say one thing, your words say another, and it's like, what are we doing here?
So, like, I'm intrigued. It's kind of like the Carson Hosfar thing in Atlanta. Like, yeah, was he driving aggressively? Yes. But I think, I think it was pre-race at Coda. I don't think he was interviewed. I think it was just, like, Chris Myers talked to him. And Hosfar, I think, had a really good answer to why he does what he does.
Mm.
I'm not, obviously, you don't want to drive aggressively. You're going to make enemies. But he said he was racing for stage wins at Atlanta. Because he doesn't know when he'll get that first win. So you're trying to rack up as many stage wins as you can because obviously you get playoff points. And obviously playoff points goes a long way to make the playoffs if you don't win a race.
Yep.
So it's kind of like, I mean, that's a good way of looking at it, you know.
Right.
Because, I mean, you want stage points anyway, but like going flat out and saying, I don't know when I'm going to get that first win. You know, I'm racing for stage wins. I mean, he probably maybe won Atlanta if the caution never came out. We don't know for sure. But he definitely had the run. But
that's true.
I think he finished in 10th yesterday, too, Carson Hosfar. So, back-to-back really solid finishes for him. And I'm double-checking to make sure he actually finished in the top 10.
I have.
He finished 13th, so but still.
I have to give a shout out to Kyle Busch for his post-race interview.
And he called himself a butthead?
Well, not that, but I was going to say doing a great job, because when him and Seabell made contact and then his right rear basically metaphorically fell apart, mm-hmm. didn't actually, but like he went off the pace. My first thought was, oh boy, Kyle Busch, microphone, he might be like blaming Seabell for this, and he didn't. And I was like, okay. You know, and he even said, he's like, hey, you know, we race clean, you know. And I think that the racing clean is what ultimately gave Seabell that pass for the contact.
Because he overshot turn one, I think it was, when he was trying to get the lead, and he didn't need to. He did it on purpose, because if he didn't overshoot it, he was going to take Kyle Busch out, mm-hmm. which obviously he did last year. And I'm pretty sure he didn't want Kyle Busch to yell at him again.
Right.
Because they showed that clip so many times yesterday. Of like Chris, it looked like Kyle Busch was yelling at his son. It was just Christopher Bell just looked so upset that he was getting yelled at. But I think Kyle Busch also, even before Bell passed him, he was using too much tire to keep Bell in front of him, which is obviously or behind him, which obviously he had to do anyway, because Mike Joy said. Christopher Bell has a win already. He won at Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Byron won the 500. Kyle Busch, I forget what the number of races, but I think it was like 56 or 59 races. Say, it's in the 50s. So Kyle Busch is 0 for 56, I'll just say. He ended a 19-long streak of winning a cup race every year, which he didn't last year.
Right.
So obviously he had, I guess, a lot more to lose than Bell and Byron, because they're already locked into the playoffs. They have to win. So, but once Bell got past Busch, I thought Byron was going to get past Bell, because Byron just looked like Bell was locking up a lot compared to Byron. So I thought Byron was going to get to him.
Yep.
So, but Bell got it. Bell won a Super Speedway and a road course. I'm pretty sure that may have been Bell's first road course win in his Cup career. I'm not quite sure.
I don't know, off the top of my head.
But I honestly think the Cup race yesterday was one of the best road course races I've seen in the Cup series in a while.
I agree. Sorry. I agree.
And it wasn't even just because of the finish. Like, the finish, you don't really see a close finish in road courses like that very often.
Mm.
But that was just, I mean, I thought Shane Van Gisbergen had it pretty much in the bag. Obviously, he didn't finish out any of the stages, because obviously he split the stage in half. But he's still good. He had the most points-wise with Kyle Busch. They both had like 14 point, got like 14 stage points. So he finished like fifth or sixth. SVG did, but I thought he was gonna win. I thought he had it locked up.
I mean,
until. That final pit stop where I don't know what it was with his car, but every time he had a pit stop, his car was just worse. Mm. And then once it got better, like once he used the tires more, it just was way better. I don't know why that was, but.
Probably just missed a setup or something, or was trying to, maybe he was just chasing.
Because even on that final restart, he just couldn't get to where he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, he might have just been chasing the car at that point.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think overall it was a really good race.
I knew once that caution came out with Hamlin and Dylan that I'm like, this is gonna get interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if Busch would have won if the caution never came out, because Bell was kind of closing in on him anyway. He may have, because obviously he may have, but I mean, I don't even know what happened with that. Even with the video, like it looked like Hamlin just turned right on it, Dylan. But Sand also came, like, flying out of his car, Hamlin's. Mm. So I don't know if he just hit Sand and he just couldn't control it, which is possible. Because there was so much sand on the track anyway. Because what are track limits in NASCAR? Outside of the S's. But,
oh, God. All right.
But,
I'm going to start that topic.
But, I mean, I thought, like, that was an incredible race yesterday. And I know a lot of people really don't like road course racing because it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you always got a, like a lull period, I guess. Which is usually always stage two, if I had to guess, for road racing. It's always stage two, whether it's Watkins Glen or whatever. It's just like, oh, whatever.
Kind of has a lull.
Yeah. So, but I thought that was like a really, I thought that was a really good race.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Circuit of the Americas year in, year out has proven why it needs to be on the circuit. And I think that there are people out there who disagree. And there are people out there who are like, nope, it does not. But, like, I mean, look at the finishes. I mean, Fox showed the last handful of years' finishes so many times yesterday for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it wasn't just them being like, oh, yeah, here's a boring race. No, it was, here's why we're here.
I think it was last year in the Xfinity race where Austin Hill and SVG were, like, going back and forth, like, door-banging each other.
Yeah.
I think that was Coda last year. But it's, like, even Xfinity race, I mean, trucks, I don't remember the truck race at all last year for some reason. I know Corey Heim won it, but I just don't remember the finish to it.
It wasn't the best.
So,
I remember that.
So, I think that's just because trucks don't do good on road courses for me.
I think they're too bulky.
Yeah, so, Xfinity and Cup, I think, for Coda are just, it's just incredible. Especially Xfinity Series. Xfinity Series, they drive aggressive.
Yeah.
And Ross Chastain on lap one yesterday. Absolutely punting Chase Elliott out of the way.
So.
Which means Denny Hamlin lost his right front fender right away. And then, like, someone, like, I think Zilich hit that. Connor Zilich, I mean, he was a talking point all weekend because rightfully so. He's a road course ringer.
Yeah. So,
something happened to him early on. I forgot what it was. I think he had a tire going down or something after the Elliott, Chastain Elliott thing. And he was in the 30s position wise, and then battled his way all the way back up to the top half of the field until he hit his own teammate, which wasn't his fault. It was kind of just, he was trying to avoid, you know, and even like an onboard, he just avoiding it all of a sudden, here comes Suarez, and all of a sudden there's Suarez's car.
Yeah, he was in his lap.
Yeah, so it was kind of unfortunate circumstance, but I thought, even though he wrecked out, Zilich is showing that he's talented, and he's only 18. So he just graduated high school. Jeez. If he even has graduated high school yet.
Probably hasn't.
But, I mean, he's won the Rolex 24, I think, twice. He's won the 12 Hours of Sebring last year. So last year alone, he won the Rolex 24, the 12 Hours of Sebring, Watkins Glen Xfinity race. He won the ARCA race at Watkins Glen. And he won, like, other stuff, too. And it was just like, okay, he's 18. Well, I guess he was probably 17 at the time. And it was just like, okay, I couldn't do that. I was, like, a junior year in high school just doing whatever. Right. And Connor Zilich is one of the best drivers in the world already. It's like, wow.
No, I mean, I think...
life hits you fast.
I think that he just needs to stay in it and do the work. You know, don't expect everything handed to you. Not that he does. But, like, I think that's probably the biggest thing here.
I mean, he just needs
to stay in it.
And I think Junior Motorsports, obviously, is one of a top Xfinity program, like, with RCR. And I think him being a track house of own driver is going to help him a lot. Because Justin Marks, honestly, might be one of the best owners. I mean, obviously, Roger Penske, Joe Gibbs, Rick Hendrick. But something about what Justin Marks is doing at track house is just special.
It's working.
Yes. Because they may not win a lot of races, but they're, like, always...
they're
contenders. Fighting for the win, yes.
Yeah, they're contenders.
And they made that really adjustment quicker than a lot of people realized. 2311 did too, even RFK. RFK once Kozlowski came in. It was just like, wow.
Yeah.
Haas Factory with the Xfinity side first. It's been 3 weeks. But Sam Mayer in his Haas Factory team finished third, I think, Saturday. Third or fourth. He was top five. Actually, I think he was third. And he's finished, well, actually, he wrecked out at Atlanta. He finished third or fourth at Daytona and now third at Coda. And if he didn't wreck out at Atlanta, he probably was going to be top five again.
Right.
I mean, technically, this is a new team because Tony Stewart's not there anymore. So it's a fully new rebranded team, new cars and all that. But Sam, like, Haas factory team on the Xfinity side has been really, really impressive. Cup side right now, a different story. But the Xfinity side, they definitely have something working. And I think on the Cup side, you're not going to, I mean.
They have been for a while, though.
The Haas factory team on the Cup side obviously still has some kinks to work out. But Sam Mayer, I mean, Sam Mayer, I think last year is really when he, I guess, what's the word? Blossomed, I guess. I won three races, I think, last year. So yeah. I think that last year was really when he, I mean, obviously he was always good anyway, but last year he really showed what he can do. Like, he's a threat to win every week,
right?
No matter what track it is. I mean, I know he's a really a good road course guy too, but man, I wonder how Sheldon Creed feels that the two car has won more times than he has since he left. Sheldon Creed, man, I feel bad for him. Has the most runner-up finishes without a win in Xfinity Series history.
Right.
Which, like, he broke that record at Loudon last year. But, I mean, Jesse Love, though, has won in that car twice. Sheldon Creed has been a threat to win in every car he's been in. JGR last year, RCR, Haas Factory now. I mean, man. It really just goes to show you how talented the Xfinity Series is field, though. I know I said that last week, too. I said it after Daytona, but Christian Eckes finished, like, 5th or 6th. Tanner Gray, another rookie, is top 10. Like, a lot of rookies, I think, finished in the top 15 again at Coda. Zilich winning, so it's just like, wow. Xfinity Series is just so talented. Truck Series, too, it's just, it's good. No, it's good for the sport to have, like, such talented fields on the other, on the lower series.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that.
Especially over the last couple of years, a lot of people watch really prefer the Xfinity Series over a Cup Series.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I watch anything racing. And if there's race cars on track, especially now that I have Flow Racing, and race going on, I'm watching.
I have a feeling, though, that people prefer Xfinity over prefer Xfinity over Cup because when's the last time we changed the Xfinity car?
It's been a while.
So I guess my point is like, I feel like race cars are like wine.
And
the longer it works and you tweak and you work on it, it gets better and better and better. And I think as much as I sat here a couple weeks ago and was like, the next gen car, as much as I hate to say it, give it 5 years, maybe 10, it might be the best stock car that NASCAR's made.
Yeah.
So, like, for Xfinity.
But the thing is, knowing how often NASCAR has changed a car, is it going to be here in 5 years?
But the thing was, is if you think about it, the Gen 6 car was racing, they raced it for almost 13 years.
Yeah.
So, it's like.
So, I think it's something I've noticed, too, was I saw people say this, either after Daytona or Atlanta, is the Xfinity car sounds a lot different than the Cup car. Like, the Xfinity Series car sounds like a stock car.
Yeah.
The Cup car really don't.
I think that has to do with your engine.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, it's just, Xfinity Series is just, I mean, they've had the same, like you said, the same car, but they've had the same package for quite a while, too.
Yeah. I don't know. I just hope that with time, the Cup car will come back to be something that the Xfinity car could be. But anyways, so any other thoughts on Coda?
No, I think that's it, really it.
The only thing I will say is that I feel like your inconsistencies for officiating continue, going through the S's. Bubba Wallace gets penalized for going through the S's and cutting a corner, and then the rest of the race they continue to do it, and NASCAR never said anything. Jordan's on his phone looking at something. Oh, hold on.
Catherine Legge's making her Cup debut this weekend.
Yeah.
Why?
Why not?
She's going from ARCA to Cup? That's a big jump.
True. But she also runs Indy. She's run sports.
Well, no, cars. I know that. Like, I know she's talented. I just, you don't usually see I mean, she's I think she's full-time in ARCA.
I say she's got a lot of...
I don't even know. Is she a full-time in ARCA? I don't even know.
I'm not sure. But she's got a lot of... she's got a lot of experience is what I'm getting at.
She's running for Live Fast Motorsports. I don't... I think she ran the Chili Bowl Nationals. Catherine Legge. Yeah, she did. So, she's very talented. Oh, Wikipedia is quick. It says she's part-time in the Cup Series.
Oh, jeez Louise.
I don't... maybe she's... I don't know. Has she even... Oh, she... Okay, so she has run Xfinity. She just hasn't run Xfinity in 2 years. Last time she ran Xfinity was Road America in 2023. And she ran the ARCA race at Daytona. But so she technically, still a stock car, but ARCA to Cup is a big jump.
Yeah, I mean, but it'll be good. It gets her seat time and hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Imagine she wins. Oh, my God.
Maybe.
It's Phoenix. Anything can happen.
Oh, jeez Louise. Phoenix.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's a whole other episode. But no, so consistency on officiating. That's been an issue. That was an issue for me. But it is what it is. I don't know how you can fix it without doing like an automated system.
I think there was one time Shane Van Gisbergen completely like missed one of the like turns. Like he wasn't even on the asphalt in one of the turns in the S's. It was just like, "Oh." And then I think I don't even know who was behind him. Whoever was behind him at the time did the same thing. And they just did a call. Never called it. It was bad, too. It was very noticeable. I was waiting. I'm like, oh, SVG is about to get a penalty.
See, like
oh,
that, never but mind. That's, but, like, that's the thing. Like, they didn't call it. So, it's like, why? Why?
Who needs consistency?
But, like, that's the issue. That's the issue here is that the caution lights, you know, all these different things. And it's like... Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you have a pileup going into turn 6A on the last restart, and NASCAR's like, they're driving. Which see, I know that's road course
yeah,
racing.
Yeah, road course
but
racing
like,
is tough for a caution anyway because especially, like, they're not going to get to that area for another, like, it's going to take, like, 2 or 3 minutes for them to get to that area where, like, Daytona or Atlanta, they're coming in, like, 30 seconds.
Right.
Well, Atlanta's, like, probably, like, 20 seconds, but. The road course, they're going to be like, okay, big wreck, and then they're not going to hit that area until a couple minutes anyway. So by the time, unless their car is stuck, like Austin Dillon was stuck in the sand.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or kitty litter, as Mike Joy called it, which pretty much does look like kitty litter.
It's the same idea.
But that was a caution. That was probably a quick – that's always like a quick caution for road course when a car is stuck.
Yeah, because it's pretty –
because there's no chance they're going to get it out.
Yeah.
Like, if there's just a spin, obviously, unless you're in a tire barrier, even then, if a car bounces out of a tire barrier, they can still keep it going for the most part, sometimes.
Right.
Even though Carson Hosfars wrecking the tire barrier in the Xfinity race, it didn't seem like he hit the car hard, but apparently he knocked the radiator out on that tiny hit. Well, oh, not a tiny hit, but
either
I feel
that.
Like he didn't seem like a car that wasn't done. He just knocked the radiator out because...
Right.
But
I don't know. It's tough.
Road courses are weird with cautions because it's like you don't need one. There's probably going to be like one caution maybe for incident, because
right,
you know, there's so much time for cars to get fired back up.
Right. Well, if you have nothing else to say about COTA.
Phoenix time.
We're headed to Phoenix.
Can't wait.
IndyCar has the week off.
They're off until March 23rd.
Yep.
For their all-star race, I guess you want to call it, at Thermal.
The Thermal, yeah.
Which is weird. I think a lot of people say, like, all-star race, two races in.
It's not so much an all-star race. It's more, it's like their clash.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. But, yeah, so Phoenix next weekend, Formula One starts in a couple weeks. So, we're moving. And the snow is melting. Nope, that wasn't a joke. The snow is melting, meaning we will have... Racing soon. Short track racing.
Yep.
And spring sports.
25 days, but who's counting? 25 days.
Clearly you are.
Run on, okay, who's counting?
Clearly you are. But I mean, the good thing about like the short
track, hey, that'll be my debut on racing on Racing America. So like,
say, so the good thing with the short tracks up here is that they can put the snowblower out there and blow the snow out, and
the good
actually,
thing, and the good
NHMS
thing
used to do that too.
And the good thing is it's a Thompson icebreaker, so we're probably expecting some snow around the
probably.
Track. Probably. It's probably gonna be a little cold, but it's okay.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
It's okay.
But all right. Well, that's gonna do it for our episode this week. Thank you so much for tuning in.
You don't want to preview Phoenix at all? It's just not. Nah, it's Phoenix.
No.
I know it's just ARCA Xfinity and Cup. ARCA Friday, Xfinity Saturday, Cup Sunday.
I'm good.
I don't even know what to say about Phoenix. It's just Phoenix. It's just like, eh.
Just Phoenix.
It's just like, ah, throwaway weekend. Yeah. We started off so good. Two super speedways and a road course. Now it's just, ah, Phoenix.
And now we're back to the regularly scheduled program.
All right. See you guys at Vegas in a couple weeks.
I don't know if Vegas is any better.
Better than Phoenix.
I hope so. NASCAR's bringing the option tire for this weekend.
I think, didn't they have the championship weekend too?
No, they didn't.
I don't know.
But they're bringing an option tire this weekend, similar to what they did at Wilkesboro.
Oh, Wilkesboro, that's what it was.
And if the tire runs better.
The Wilkesboro race still sucked even with that.
If the tire is better, then NASCAR will bring that option tire as the only tire to the championship race.
Oh, please.
So it's in an effort to try and make the racing better. So we'll have to see how that goes.
It doesn't give me hope because the last time they did that was the All-Star race, and the All-Star race was kind of like, what happened? You didn't miss much. It just happened. Ricky Stenhouse versus Kyle Busch.
That's more or less what happened.
It's kind of, like I saw it. It was kind of bad. You forgot who won the All-Star race. Like, I forgot it was Logano for the longest time just because of the fight. It was just like, who won the All-Star race? I don't even know.
That's true.
They kind of cut Logano's interview short at that same time because it was just like, oh, they're interviewing Logano. Oh, meanwhile, punch is thrown.
Gotta go.
Here comes Ricky Stenhouse Jr.'s dad.
Regan, run!
Here comes Stenhouse Jr.'s dad in the mix.
Regan
throwing
Smith.
Haymakers.
Regan Smith, I need you to jump the wall. Go! No, but we'll see.
Phoenix.
We'll see what brings. What Phoenix brings.
Maybe ARCA will be a show.
Oh, they're always a show.
Always a show.
No, that should be fun. Friday night. ARCA, Xfinity, Saturday, Cup on Sunday. So we'll see.
Xfinity is not too bad at Phoenix.
They're not too bad.
I don't remember what they were the first weekend, but the championship race was pretty good. Maybe just because it was the championship and like all the four championship drivers were all in the top five, so they're all like, no.
We're fine.
I'll put you in the wall if I have to.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, Phoenix. I love it.
Here we go. All right. On that note.
I've always have a goal to like attend not all in the same year because that would just be a lot. That means like one day to be like, oh, I've been to like every NASCAR track. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to go to Phoenix. Maybe just for championship weekend. Besides that, I don't want to go to Phoenix.
Phoenix is on the bucket list just to go experience the track and the event, but I don't know. I think that the racing just needs to improve and they'll get there eventually, but it's just. It's so tough when you don't have testing, when you only have NASCAR-sanctioned testing, and the track that you're trying to work on to get better is the entire length of the country away.
Yeah.
Like.
So it's not like.
Like, if this was Charlotte, this issue would have been fixed months or years ago because NASCAR would have been like, okay, you, and you, come with me. We're going down the road. You know, bring your race car. Whereas now it's like, okay, we're going to schedule a test. We got to drive all the way out to Arizona. So it's tough, and I get it from NASCAR's point of view. But at the same time, it's like, can we fix it? Like, let's Bob DeBuilder this. Can we fix it? Yes, we can. Sound guy like that one. But anyways, I don't know. It's just something NASCAR's got to work on, and hopefully they will eventually.
Yeah.
But maybe this goes back to the fact that we just need to get rid of the race car. Bring back the Gen 6. I saw a photo from the first year that Charlotte ran the Roval, and those race cars looked like race cars. They looked like street cars. Like, it was like, you look at Jimmy Johnson's front end, and it's like, that's a Camaro. Now it's like we're back to the COT, where the cars are all the same, roughly the same, and it's like... NASCAR's like, well, we're trying to even the competition. Okay, great, but can we make a good race car to do that?
No.
All right. This is what happens
it's
when
okay.
I.
It's okay.
This is what happens when I say we're done, and you're like, let's keep talking.
It's okay.
Devin gets.
It's okay. It's
Devin
okay.
gets.
It's okay. The Gen 8 car, the door's going to be on, like on the fender.
What do you mean we're doing open wheels for Gen 8? Formula 1 is so popular now. Modifieds are going to finally have their time.
They should have a while ago.
All right.
On to Phoenix.
On to Phoenix. For Jordan Jenkins, I'm Devin Poslesny. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you all soon for the next episode of Racing Hotspot.